You're listening to the Shapeless Mass Podcast at shapelessmass.com.
Are you ready, boys?
Yeah, braced and ready.
Here we go.
Do it.
It's a cruel, cruel world, all you little boys and girls. And some mean, nasty people want to have you for their supper. But if you follow me, you can all be free, free. You can all be free. As a bird on a big TV, if you dream, if you dream, if you dream, my dream.
Cruel, cruel world for the nasty boys and girls. For the selfish, mean, nasty people. Nasty, 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 nasty.
But there's a way you can make your day. You can laugh, you can smile, you can come and stay a while. You can dream my dream, you can have it all with me. You can dream my dream, you can dream my dream. You can dream my dream.
That was the always stirring Danny Elfman with the song Floop's Song, in parentheses, Cruel World. It's from the soundtrack to the movie Spy Kids. My nephew is the one who put me on to this song. I've always been fascinated with Danny Elfman's singing work outside of his early band Oingo Boingo. His actual soundtrack material for movies such as A Nightmare for Christmas, I've always found to be phenomenal. Maybe that's a bit cheesy of me to enjoy it, but this kind of fits very well. If you like Nightmare for Christmas, you should have enjoyed that song. Well, hello there. It's me, EBA. Got something different for you guys today. This is going to be the first ever podcast where it's basically safe for kids. Safe for families, safe for grandmothers, safe for grandfathers, safe for playing at church, safe for playing in front of your whatever, safe for playing at work. However, that's not to say it's not going to have material that might be considered off. I'm actually doing this episode devoted to the corruption of innocence. I've had an interest for quite a long time. Originally, when I was going to high school, I was interested in literature just in general. I've always been kind of a book reader. And along the way, I became interested in a very fascinating animated documentary I saw by Disney. And it's done in the classic Disney style, but it's basically about the history of some of Mother Goose stories. Some of those stories and those poems are very dark and disturbing when you come right down to it. A lot of Mother Goose wouldn't be acceptable reading material in schools these days. The thing is, people consider children to be a lot more mature than they are these days. So there's kind of this idea that we shelter children from bad things, from dark things, from things that might be a little bit somewhat naughty. My interest was further fueled by reading the Brothers Grimm Fairy Tales, which I'm going to be reading some selections from, as well as a book that my parents bought me, I want to say I was about 10, maybe 11. And I've read it and reread it multiple times since then. It's called The Illustrated Treasury of Humor for Children. And what it is it's a collection of mostly poems, cute little poems, that is, in the traditional sense of cute children's literature. But it's all public domain material. Part of the reason that most of the material is in the public domain is simply because there is no way... There is no way that most modern publications would include these some of these poems. Some of them are pretty, you know, mundane and ordinary and boring. But there's quite a few that just contain a very dark element in a way that you wouldn't think would be appropriate for children. So that's what I'm going to focus on. We'll be playing music that is kind of sort of in the dark vein as far as maybe it's actually written for children, but still kind of feels a little off. And I'll also be playing songs that are kind of twisted versions of children's songs in some way, shape, or form. Everything I'll be playing is in some way related to children. So I'm going to get right into it. Let's start with one of my favorite poems from this book that's actually not one of the darker selections, but it's just a great little story, a great little poem, rather. There's no title. It says, "'Twas midnight on the ocean, and not a streetcar was in sight. The sun was shining brightly, for it rained all day that night. 'Twas a summer day in winter, and the snow was raining fast, as a barefoot boy with shoes on stood sitting in the grass." I love this poem because of the way it plays with the obvious adjectives and modifying phrases to kind of contradict itself, and I find that absolutely hysterically funny. not in a laugh-out-loud kind of way, but in a very clever, you know, kind of way. Makes me wish I'd written something to that effect. There's a whole page here just devoted to limericks. There once was a lady of Niger who smiled as she rode on a tiger. They returned from the ride with the lady inside and the smile on the face of the tiger. A cat in despondency sighed and resolved to commit suicide. He got under the wheels of 9 automobiles, and after the last one, he died. Here's another set of poems that aren't quite as dark, but I just find them absolutely great. Mother, may I go to swim? Yes, my darling daughter. Hang your clothes on yonder limb, but don't go near the water. Father, may I go to war? Yes, you may, my son. Wear your woolen comforter, but don't fire off your gun. A daring young lady of Guam observed the Pacific so calm. I'll swim out for a lark. She met a large shark. Let us now sing the 19th Psalm. Yeah, lots of people die in these limericks. It's kind of sad, really. Again, this one's not so dark, but I don't know. I've never heard it outside of this book, and it just cracks me up. Sweet, sweet Caroline dipped her face in turpentine. Turpentine made it shine. Sweet, sweet Caroline. And here we get into the much darker material. One night, Jeanette, a roguish little lass, snuck in the guest room and turned on the gas. When morning dawned, the guest was dead in bed. But children will be children, Mama said. How sweet. This one I've actually seen outside of this book. It's kind of a notorious poem. It's called The Story of Little Suck-a-Thumb. And it's basically a cautionary tale as to why children should never suck their thumbs. And then we're going to listen to a song. One day, Mama said, Conrad, dear, I must go out and leave you here. But mind now, Conrad, what I say. Don't suck your thumb while I'm away. The great tall tailor always comes to little boys who suck their thumbs. And ere they dream what he's about, he takes his great sharp scissors out and cuts their thumbs clean off. And then, you know, they never grow again. Mama had scarcely turned her back. The thumb was in. Alack, alack. The door flew open. In he ran, the great long red-legged scissor man. Oh, children, see, the tailor's come and caught our little suck-a-thumb. Snip, snap, snip, the scissors go. And Conrad cries out, oh, oh, oh. Mama comes home. There Conrad stands and looks quite sad as he shows his hands. Ah, said Mama, I knew he'd come to naughty little suck-a-thumb. Kind of a harsh lesson for, you know, wonder how many children basically heard that and were terrified out of sucking their thumbs. Probably quite a few. So anyway, I'm going to come back and I'm going to read some from Brothers Grimm with one of my personal favorite children's stories ever. But first I'm going to play a song. I'm going to start with the rather haunting Pure Imagination, sung by Gene Wilder from the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And it's just a personally touching song. I find it absolutely fascinating, and hopefully you'll enjoy it.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination. We'll begin with a spin, traveling in the world of my creation. What we'll see will defy explanation. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it. Want to change the world? There's nothing to it. There's no life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free
if you truly wish to be.
Want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it. Want to change the world, there's nothing to it. Life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly.
Dumb dummy and disrespect your mommy.
Have you forgotten
who put you on this earth, huh?
Who brought you all proud
and who loved you since your birth? Reward is a brainwashed kid going wild. Young little girls already have a child.
Bad company.
Hey, now you've been framed.
Your parents are hurted.
Hurted and ashamed.
For ruining yourself.
And your mommy can't cope. Hey, little kids, don't follow these dopes.
As a rule from a non-fool.
Your life don't drool. Don't be a fool like those that don't go to school.
Get ahead
and accomplish things. You'll see the wonder and the joy life brings.
Don't admire these.
Hey, they don't admire you. Their time's limited, hard rocks too. So listen, be strong, scream whoopee-doo. Go for yours, cause dreams come true.
And you'll make your mommy
so proud of you too.
And this is Sebastian's
that the ruler, you know, Rick threw, you know, and it's true.
You know what?
You look fly.
You don't have an
oh, oh my. You've been fighting again and you forgot why. Hey kid, walk straight, master your high.
Why?
Because you make your family cry. And all jokes aside, are you in good health?
Hey little boy,
now have you really checked yourself? You're a disgust, you know someone that I can't trust.
You'd steal Ma's welfare
and you'd run and buy some dust and
plus, I must say,
big shot you're not. Your friends are talking and I'm hearing that your girls are what? You didn't know? Go steal and rob.
And while you're at it,
go get a suit for a job. You see, you're acting like this urge is demanding.
Come on, wake up.
Have some understanding. Society's a weak excuse for a man.
It's time for the
righteous. Now it's time to take the stand. Believe it or not, the Lord still shines on you. He
guides you.
And he watched you as you grew. Plus,
past the age of
a little child, that's true. But folks your age don't act like you do.
So be mature.
And put the boy to a halt.
And if you're over 18,
I wish you'd act like an adult.
Don't live in a world
of hate.
Put yourself together
and get yourself.
yourself straight.
Men don't steal.
Hey, most don't borrow.
And if you smoke crack,
your kids will smoke crack tomorrow.
So be more mature.
And kids, do your chores.
Make your own money.
Hey, be proud, that's yours.
You know why? Cause that's a man.
That's brains, no spite.
Staying out of trouble.
When it comes in sight.
And a man never loses a fight.
In God's sight, cause righteous laws are overdue. And this is a message that the ruler Rick threw. And it's true.
You know what?
And there we have Gene Wilder with Pure Imagination, followed up with Slick Rick and his very classic, Hey Young World. I'm now going to read from Brothers Grimm. For those of you who haven't read any Brothers Grimm at all, you really should. You're very familiar with the stories, but you're not familiar with the actual stories and the way they go. There's quite a different thing going on when you actually read these stories because they've been cleaned up a lot, made a lot nicer than they really are. One of my personal favorite examples of this is Snow White, in which at the end of the story, you know, she gets back to the castle. I hate to ruin the story for you, but she gets back to the castle. They dress her up as one of the maids of the court. They trick the queen, the evil queen, into admitting that she had Snow White killed, so she thought. Her punishment is to be stripped naked, placed into a barrel that has had nails hammered throughout, I mean, like just riddled with nails, and then rolled through town until she's dead, which is just a pretty gruesome way to kill somebody. I can think of far easier and more effective ways of killing somebody than that. So I'm going to read, this is a Brothers Grimm tale. It's called The Mouse, the Bird, and the Sausage. And it's a beautiful story. And very absurd, actually. Once on a time, a mouse and a bird and a sausage lived and kept house together in perfect peace among themselves and in great prosperity. One would think the bird would eat the sausage, or maybe the mouse, I don't know. It was the bird's business to fly to the forest every day and bring back wood. The mouse had to draw the water, make the fire, and set the table, and the sausage had to do the cooking, which is hard to do when you don't have any limbs. Nobody is content in this world. Much will have more. Okay. One day, the bird met another bird on the way and told him of his excellent condition in life, but the other bird called him a poor simpleton to do so much work while the other two led easy lives at home. When the mouse had made up her fire and drawn water, she went to rest in her little room until it was time to lay the cloth. The sausage stayed by the saucepans, looking to it that the victuals were well cooked, and just before dinner time, he stirred the broth or the stew 3 or 4 times well round himself, so as to enrich and season and flavor it. So basically, he hops into the meal and uses himself to flavor it. I didn't write this. Then the bird used to come home and lay down his load, and they sat down to the table, and after a good meal, they would go to bed and sleep their fill till the next morning. It really was a most satisfactory life. But the bird came to the resolution next day never again to fetch wood. He had, he said, been their slave long enough. Now they must change about and make a new arrangement. So in spite of all the mouse and the sausage could say, the bird was determined to have his own way. So they drew lots to settle it, and it fell so that the sausage was to fetch wood, the mouse was to cook, and the bird was to draw water. Now see what happened. The sausage went away after wood, the bird made up the fire, and the mouse put on the pot. And they waited until the sausage should come home, bringing the wood for the next day. But the sausage was absent so long that they thought something must have happened to him. And the bird went part of the way to see if he could see anything of him. Not far off, he met a dog on the road, who, looking upon the sausage as lawful prey, had picked him up and made an end of him. Yum, yum. The bird then lodged a complaint against the dog as an open and flagrant robber. Interesting choice of things to accuse him of. I would gone with murder, but okay. But it was all no good, as the dog declared that he had found forged letters upon the sausage so that he deserved to lose his life. Which is why I usually eat sausage myself, because the sausage contains forged letters. The bird then sadly took up the wood and carried it home himself, and related to the mouse all he had seen and heard. Then were both very troubled, but determined to look on the bright side of things, and to still remain together. And so the bird laid the cloth, and the mouse prepared the food, and finally got into the pot, as the sausage used to do, to stir and flavor the broth. But then she had to part with fur and skin, and lastly with life. I love the way they describe the fact that the mouse boiled to death. I just love the way they describe that. And when the bird came to dish up the supper, there was no cook to be seen, and he turned over the heap of wood and looked, but the cook never appeared again. By accident, the wood caught fire, and the bird hastened to fetch water to put it out. But he let fall the bucket in the well and himself after it, and as he could not get out again, he was obliged to be drowned. Again, I love the way that they describe the fact that the bird drowned. He was obliged to be drowned. All in all, I understand that the moral of this story is that you should be happy with your place, that, you know, everything serves a purpose, and that, you know, you shouldn't complain about your lot in life, but I can think of more effective, less bizarre ways of communicating that moral to people. I have two more Brothers Grimm stories I'll be reading a little later on, but right now I'm going to play a song, and then we'll come back with some absolutely darling poetry, quite possibly the sweetest poetry you'll ever hear in your entire life. In the meantime, this is a personal favorite song of mine, an actual personal anthem. It's by Jim Henson, performing as Kermit the Frog. It's from the original Muppet movie. The song's called The Rainbow Connection. And a little side note about The Rainbow Connection. This is a song I'd like to have played at my funeral. When you think about it, when you actually listen to the lyrics, it's a very dark song. It's all about skepticism, and yet, while being skeptical, maintaining kind of a fascination with how beautiful the world is, which very accurately sums up my feeling about most things. If you listen to the chorus particularly, he talks about how the lovers and the dreamers are fascinated with rainbows and some sort of mystical meaning. And throughout the whole song, he's constantly saying, well, no, that's not true. I don't, you know, there is no mystical meaning behind rainbows. But at the same time, he's pondering as to why exactly people are fascinated with them. And he includes himself in the list, outside of the list of lovers and dreamers, interestingly enough. He doesn't consider himself a lover or a dreamer, just someone who's fascinated with rainbows, which to me makes him a lover and a dreamer. But anyway, it's a beautiful song, and I'm going to follow that up with not a beautiful song. It's a song by Korn, and the song's called Chutes and Ladders.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows, and what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know their wrong way and see. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me. Who said that every wish would be heard and answered when wished on the morning star? Somebody thought of that, and someone believed it. Look what it's done so far. What's so amazing that keeps us stargazing? And what do we think we might see? Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me. All of us under its spell, we know that it's probably magic. Sweet sound
young sailors, the voice might be one and the same. I've heard it too many times to ignore it. It's something that I'm supposed to be. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me.
Uplifting sound of Korn. This next selection I'm going to read to you is under the page Little Willies. There are four separate short poems here. They all kind of have the same sort of theme to them. concerning a young boy named Willie, who's a bit of a ruffian. Into the cistern little Willie pushed his little sister Lily. Mother couldn't find our daughter. Now we sterilize our water. Willie poisoned father's tea. Father died in agony. Mother came and looked quite vexed. Really, Will, she said, what's next? Now, I'm going to read these out of order because, really, there's a story to it. But I'm going to save my personal favorite for last just because it's so great. Little Willie, in bows and sashes, fell in the fire and got burned to ashes. In the winter, when the weather is chilly, no one likes to poke up Willie. There's a nice little double entendre there, I'm sure. This is my personal favorite. Willie, with a thirst for gore, nailed the baby to the door. Mother said with humor quaint, Willie, dear, don't spoil the paint. Yeah, kind of gives you that warm feeling inside. Along kind of the same vein, father heard his children scream, so he threw them in the stream, saying as he drowned the third, children should be seen, not heard. Here's a short one. It's called The Troll. It's actually got an author attached to it, Jack Pruletsky. Be wary of the loathsome troll that slyly lies in wait to drag you to his dingy hole and put you on his plate. His blood is black and boiling hot. He gurgles ghastly groans. He'll cook you in his dinner pot, your skin, your flesh, your bones. He'll catch your arms and clutch your legs and grind you to a pulp, then swallow you like scrambled eggs, gobble, gobble, gulp. So watch your steps when you next go upon a pleasant stroll, or you might end in the pit below as supper for the troll. The next thing I'm going to read is another Brothers Grimm fairy tale. This is quite possibly my favorite of all the Brothers Grimm fairy tales, simply because of the what the heck is going on quality to it. And at the same time, along with that kind of mysterious, nonsensical quality to it, is also a very dark story. I'll be boogered if I can locate a single sort of moral from this. It's also extremely short. Now, one of the things that most people don't know about Brothers Grimm is that most of the stories were delivered to music. And as is often the case in Brothers Grimm stories, as with this one, there's actually a refrain that may be sung not only by the person delivering or perhaps a traveling musician that went with, because these were oral stories originally before they were written down, but it might have also been sung by the people in attendance hearing the story, kind of to get audience participation going. I positively cannot praise everything about how bizarre this story is enough. It's called Mr. Korbs, and you're just going to absolutely love it. And you'll notice there's a section of poetry in the story. As I said, I suspect that as each animal joins the group, you kind of sort of were supposed to sing this song to go along with it. So here we go. A cock and a hen once wanted to go on a journey together. So the cock built a beautiful carriage with four red wheels, and he harnessed four little mice to it. And the cock and the hen got into it and were driven off. Very soon they met a cat, who asked where they were going. The cock answered, "On Mr. Korbs, a call to pay. And that is where we go today." "Take me with you," said the cat. The cock answered, "Very well, only you must sit well back, and then you will not fall forward," which is good advice. "And pray take care of my red wheels there, and wheels be ready, and mice be steady. On Mr. Korbs a call to pay, for that is where we go today." Then there came up a millstone, then an egg, then a duck, then a pin, and lastly a needle, who all got up on the carriage and were driven along. But when they came to Mr. Korbs' house, he was not at home. So the mice drew the carriage into the barn, the cock and the hen flew up and perched on the beam, the cat sat by the fireside, the duck settled on the water, but the egg wrapped itself in the towel, the pin stuck itself in the chair cushion, the needle jumped into the bed among the pillows, and the millstone laid itself by the door. Now, I'm going to take an aside real quick here. Anytime a millstone shows up in a Brothers Grimm fairy tale, somebody is going to die. I'm just going to let you know, if you're reading Brothers Grimm and a millstone features anywhere in the story, as you're going to hear later on when we get to the juniper tree, somebody is going to die. There is no doubt about it, as is the case with this story. Then Mr. Corbs came home, and went to the hearth to make a fire, but the cat threw ashes in his eyes. Then he ran quickly into the kitchen to wash himself, but the duck splashed water in his face. Then he was going to wipe it with a towel, but the egg broke in it, and stuck his eyelids together. In order to get a little peace, he sat down in the chair, but the pin ran into him, and starting up in his vexation, he threw himself on the bed. But as his head fell on the pillow, in went the needle, so he called out with the pain, and madly rushed out. But when he reached the house door, the millstone jumped up and struck him dead. What a bad man Mr. Corbs must have been. And that's how the story ends. Now, a couple of things I love about this sordid tale of Mr. Corbs. One of the things that doesn't jump out right away is the fact that it was originally the cock and the hen who go to see Mr. Corbs. They're the ones who construct the little coach that they ride to his house, driven by mice. And yet they never actually do anything to Mr. Corbs. It's like it was their idea to go, but they don't show up. Once they get to the house, they head off to a beam, and then they're left out of the story, like they don't play a part. Every single other person who comes along with them, though, or every single other creature and item, I should say, somehow plays a part in his horrid demise. Now, also of interest to me is the fact that there's no real context for why Mr. Corbs is killed. I mean, on one hand, you could look at it as it's just a way of saying that bad things happen all the time for no reason. But I don't like to think that that's really the case. I mean, it would be different if there was not such a cast of characters who were so dedicated to going to his house as the setup for the story. It seemed more like it's just, I don't know. I'm at a loss for words, to be quite honest. I don't know what Mr. Corbs could have done to justify this horrible fate. Perhaps nothing. Perhaps it's an unjust fate. The story is incredibly ambiguous and has positively no closure other than the fact that the main character, well, I don't know if he's a main character, he's the subject of the story, of the title, ends up dying. I mean, there's no real, you know, explanation as to what exactly occurred. I absolutely love this story. Now, I'm going to play a song. It's by a group I was in called Apex Zero. The song is called Zero to Infinity. One of the things you'll notice about it is that it uses the lyrics, the poetry part of Mr. Corbs in the song. I'm going to follow that up with a song by the Poo Poo Varmint called After All, and that will be apparently obvious as to why.
Are scored against perfection. Ours lose points in mass production. Sharp points of pain bring corruption. I know I am still alone in this busy world I call my home. People pass me heading home, laughing at what's in my palm. Yes.
Mystical, so cold to pay. That is where we go today. A mystical, so cold to pay. the light, overshadow the shadow with might. The fight extinguished, the most distinguished. To the point of no return, feel the point slowly burn. Point to the place to learn. At some point, the world will cease to turn. The stars die, I try to pry eyes from the sky to the ground as the sky pounds on the shot. Why try to stop the inevitable? Just because it's regrettable. Lies are the prize, it's ungettable. Prophetic, pathetic, apathetic, I am eclectic. Sparked here at the dark blue lights, electric. Wires cross, fires cross, fires cross, fires cross. Tired, lost, and wrong. My song belongs to the lost. The last has their hope into the dope and dreams. Schemes, deadly schemes, as our moral fabric separates at the seams. Still alone in this busy world I call my own. People pass me headed home, crying out what's in my heart.
Taking care of my rear wheels is there, and wheels be ready, and mice be steady. On mystical subculture, for that is where we come to play. On mystical subculture, for that is where we come to play.
Small World. And before that, Apex Zero, which is a group with me and my man Void, doing Zero to Infinity. Originally, I had mentioned that what really inspired my interest in disturbing children's literature was a movie by Disney called The Real Mother Goose. About that film, it's been highly analyzed over the years. It was released in, I want to say, the 60s or so, and it's definitely worth tracking down. But most of the theories posited in the film have been roundly rejected as true explanations for the stories. Still, I find some of the explanations oddly compelling and certainly apt. And of course, in some ways, we'll never properly know. So we're going to end this off with a story that I'm not actually going to read. I have a recording I downloaded from a website of a man by the name of Brad Bush reading the story, The Juniper Tree. And I'm going to follow that up, going to end the podcast off with the song I Can by Nas.
Long, long ago, some 2,000 years or so, there lived a rich man with a good and beautiful wife. They loved each other dearly, but sorrowed much that they had no children. So greatly did they desire to have one, that the wife prayed for it day and night, but still they remained childless. In front of the house there was a court, in which grew a juniper tree. One winter's day, the wife stood under the tree to peel some apples, and as she was peeling them, she cut her finger, and the blood fell on the snow. "Ah," sighed the woman heavily, "if I had but a child as red as blood and as white as snow." And as she spoke the words, her heart grew light within her, and it seemed to her that her wish was granted, and she returned to the house feeling glad and comforted. A month passed, and the snow had all disappeared. Then another month went by, and all the earth was green. So the months followed one another, and first the trees budded in the woods, and soon the green branches grew thickly intertwined, and then the blossoms began to fall. Once again the wife stood under the juniper tree, and it was so full of sweet scent that her heart leapt for joy, and she was so overcome with her happiness that she fell on her knees. Presently the fruit became round and firm, and she was glad and at peace. But when they were fully ripe, she picked the berries and ate eagerly of them, and then she grew sad and ill. A little while later she called her husband and said to him, weeping, "If I die, bury me under the juniper tree." Then she felt comforted and happy again, and before another month had passed, she had a little child. And when she saw that it was as white as snow and as red as blood, her joy was so great that she died. Her husband buried her under the juniper tree and wept bitterly for her. By degrees, however, his sorrow grew less, and although at times he still grieved over his loss, he was able to go about as usual. And later on, he married again. He now had a little daughter born to him. The child of his first wife was a boy, who was as red as blood and as white as snow. The mother loved her daughter very much, and when she looked at her and then looked at the boy, it pierced her heart to think that he would always stand in the way of her own child, and she was continually thinking how she could get the whole of the property for her. This evil thought took possession of her more and more, and made her behave very unkindly to the boy. She drove him from place to place with cuffings and buffetings, so that the poor child went about in fear, and had no peace, from the time he left school to the time he went back. One day the little daughter came running to her mother in the storeroom, and said, "Mother, give me an apple." "Yes, my child," said the wife. And she gave her a beautiful apple out of the chest that had a very heavy lid and a large iron lock. "Mother," said the little daughter again, "may not brother have one too?" The mother was angry at this, but she answered, "Yes, when he comes out of school." Just then she looked out of the window and saw him coming, and it seemed as if an evil spirit entered into her, for she snatched the apple out of her little daughter's hand and said, "You shall not have one before your brother." Then she threw the apple into the chest and shut it too. The little boy now came in, and the evil spirit in the wife made her say kindly to him, "My son, will you have an apple?" But she gave him a wicked look. "Mother," said the boy, "how dreadful you look. Yes, give me an apple." The thought came to her that she would kill him. "Come with me," she said, and she lifted up the lid to the chest. "Take one out for yourself." and as he bent over to do so, the evil spirit urged her, and crash, down came the lid, and off went the little boy's head. Then she was overwhelmed with fear at the thought of what she had done. "If only I can prevent anyone from knowing that I did it," she thought. So she went upstairs to her room and took a white handkerchief out of the top drawer. Then she set the boy's head again on his shoulders and bound it with a handkerchief so that nothing could be seen, and placed him on a chair by the door with an apple in his hand. Soon after this, little Marlene came up to her mother, who was stirring a pot of boiling water over the fire, and said, "Mother, brother is sitting by the door with an apple in his hand, and he looks so pale. And when I asked him to give me the apple, he did not answer, and that frightened me." "Go to him again," said her mother, "and if he does not answer, give him a box on the ear." So little Marlene went and said, "Brother, give me that apple." But he did not say a word, and then she gave him a box on the ear, and his head rolled off. She was so terrified at this that she ran crying and screaming to mother. "Oh," she said, "I have knocked off brother's head." And then she wept and wept, and nothing would stop her. "What have you done?" said her mother. "But no one must know about it, so you must keep silence. What is done can't be undone. We will make him into puddings." And she took the little boy and cut him up, made him into puddings, and put him in the pot. But Marlene stood looking on and wept and wept, and her tears fell into the pot so that there was no need of salt. Presently the father came home and sat down to his dinner. He asked, "Where is my son?" The mother said nothing, but gave him a large dish of black pudding, and Marlene still wept without ceasing. The father asked again, "Where is my son?" "Oh," answered the wife, "he has gone into the country to his mother's great uncle. He is going to stay there for some time." "What is he gone there for? And he never even said goodbye to me." "Well, he likes being there, and he told me he should be away quite 6 weeks. He is well looked after there." "I feel very unhappy about it," said the husband. "In case it should not be all right, and he ought to have said goodbye to me." With this, he went on with his dinner and said, "Little Marlene, why do you weep? Brother will be back soon." Then he asked his wife for more pudding, and as he ate, he threw the bones under the table. Little Marlene went upstairs and took a best silk handkerchief out of her bottom drawer, and in it she wrapped all the bones from under the table and carried them outside, and all the time she did nothing but weep. Then she laid them in the green grass under the juniper tree, and had no sooner done so than all her sadness seemed to leave her, and she wept no more. And now the juniper tree began to move, and the branches waved backwards and forwards, first away from one another, and then together again, as it might be some clapping of their hands for joy. After this, a mist came round the tree, and in the midst of it there was a burning as of fire, and out of the fire there flew a beautiful bird that rose high into the air, singing magnificently. And when it could no more be seen, the juniper tree stood there as before, and the silk handkerchief and the bones were gone. Little Marlene now felt as light-hearted and happy as if her brother were still alive, and she went back to the house and sat down cheerfully to the table and ate. The bird flew away and alighted on the house of a goldsmith and began to sing. "My mother killed her little son. My father grieved when I was gone. My sister loved me best of all. She laid her kerchief over me and took my bones that they might lie underneath the juniper tree. Kuwit, kuwit, what a beautiful bird am I." The goldsmith was in his workshop making a gold chain. When he heard the song of the bird on his roof, he thought it so beautiful that he got up, ran out, and as he crossed the threshold, he lost one of his slippers. But he ran on into the middle of the street with a slipper on one foot and a sock on the other. He still had on his apron and still held the gold chain and the pincers in his hands. And so he stood gazing up at the bird while the sun came shining brightly down the street. "Bird," he said, "how beautiful you sing. Sing me that song again." "Nay," said the bird, "I do not sing twice for nothing. Give me that gold chain, and I will sing it to you again."
"Here is the chain. Take it," said the goldsmith. "Only sing me that song again."
The bird flew down and took the gold chain in his right claw, and then he alighted again in front of the goldsmith and sang,
My mother killed her little son. My father grieved when I was gone. My sister loved me best of all. She laid her kerchief over me, and took my bones that they might lie underneath the juniper tree. Kuwit, kuwit, what a beautiful bird am I. Then he flew away and settled on the roof of a shoemaker's house and sang. My mother killed her little son. My father grieved when I was gone. My sister loved me most of all. She laid her kerchief over me and took my bones that they might lie underneath the juniper tree. Kuwit, kuwit, what a beautiful bird am I. The shoemaker heard him, and he jumped up and ran in his shirt sleeves and stood looking up at the bird on the roof with his hand over his eyes to keep himself from being blinded by the sun. "Bird," he said, "how beautiful you sing." Then he called through the door to his wife. "Wife, come out here. Here is a bird. Come and look at it and hear how beautiful it sings." Then he called to his daughter and the children, then the apprentices, girls and boys, and they all ran up the street to look at the bird and saw how splendid it was with its red and green feathers, and its neck like burnished gold, and eyes like two bright stars in its head. "Bird," said the shoemaker, "sing me that song again." "Nay," answered the bird, "I do not sing twice for nothing. You must give me something." "Wife," said the man, "go in the garret. Up on the upper shelf you will see a pair of red shoes. Bring them to me." The wife went in and fetched the shoes. "There, bird," said the shoemaker, "now sing me that song again." The bird flew down and took the red shoes in his left claw, and then he went back to the roof and sang. "My mother killed her little son. My father grieved when I was gone. My sister loved me best of all. She laid her kerchief over me and took my bones that they might lie underneath the juniper tree. Kuwit, kuwit, what a beautiful bird am I." When he had finished, he flew away. He had the chain in his right claw and the shoes in his left, and he flew right away to the mill. And the mill went click, clack, click, clack, click, clack. Inside the mill were 20 of the miller's men hewing a stone, and they went hick, hack, hick, hack. And the mill went click, clack, click, clack. The bird settled on a lime tree in front of the mill and sang, "My mother has killed her little son." Then one of the men left off. "My father grieved when I was gone." Two more men left off and listened. "My sister loved me best of all." Then four more left off. "Then laid her kerchief over me and took my bones that they might lie. Now there were only 8 at work underneath, and now only 5. The juniper tree, and now only 1. Kuwit, kuwit, what a beautiful bird am I." Then he looked up, and the last one had left off work. "Bird," he said, "what a beautiful song it is you sing. Let me hear it too. Sing it again." "Nay," answered the bird, "I do not sing twice for nothing. Give me that millstone, and I will sing again." "If it belonged to me alone," said the man, "you should have it." "Yes, yes," said the others. "If he will sing again, he can have it." The bird came down, and all the 20 millers set to and lifted up the stone with a beam. Then the bird put his head through the hole and took the stone round his neck like a collar and flew back with it to the tree and sang. "My mother killed her little son. My father grieved when I was gone. My sister loved me best of all. She laid her kerchief over me and took my bones that they might lie underneath the juniper tree. Kuwit, kuwit, what a beautiful bird am I." And when he had finished his song, he spread his wings, and with the chain in his right claw, the shoes in his left, and the millstone round his neck, he flew right away to his father's house. The father, the mother, and little Marlene were having their dinner. "How light-hearted I feel," said the father, "so pleased and cheerful." "And I," said the mother, "I feel so uneasy, as if a heavy thunderstorm were coming." But little Marlene sat and wept and wept. Then the bird came flying towards the house and settled on the roof. "I do feel so happy," said the father, "and how beautiful the sun shines. I feel just as if I were going to see an old friend again." "Ah," said the wife, "and I am so full of distress and uneasiness that my teeth chatter, and I feel as if there were fire in my veins." And she tore open her dress, and all the while little Marlene sat in the corner and wept, and the plate on her knees was wet with her tears. The bird now flew to the juniper tree and began singing. "My mother killed her little son." The mother shut her eyes and her ears that she might see and hear nothing.
But there was a roaring sound in her ears, like that of a violent storm, and in her eyes a burning and flashing like lightning. "My father grieved when I was gone." "Look, mother," said the man, "at the beautiful bird that is singing so magnificently, and how warm and bright the sun is, and what a delicious scent of spices in the air." "My sister loved me best of all." Then little Marlene laid her head down on her knees and sobbed. "I must go outside and see the bird nearer," said the man. "Ah, do not go," cried the wife. "I feel as if the whole house were in flames." But the man went out and looked at the bird. "She laid her kerchief over me and took my bones that I might lie underneath the juniper tree. Kawit, kawit, what a beautiful bird am I." With that, the bird let fall the gold chain, and it fell just round the man's neck so that it fitted him exactly. He went inside and said, "See, what a splendid bird that is. He has given me this beautiful gold chain, and it looks so beautiful himself." But the wife was in such fear and trouble that she fell on the floor, and her cap fell from her head. Then the bird began again. "My mother killed her little son." "Ah me," cried the wife, "if I were but 1,000 feet beneath the earth, that I might not hear that song. My father grieved when I was gone." Then the woman fell down again as if dead. "My sister loved me best of all." "Well," said little Marlene, "I will go out too and see if the bird will give me anything." So she went out. "She laid her kerchief over me and took my bones that they might lie." And he threw down the shoes to her. "Underneath the juniper tree, kawit, kawit, what a beautiful bird am I." And she now felt quite happy and light-hearted. She put on the shoes and danced and jumped about in them. "I was so miserable," she said, "when I came out, but that is all passed away. That is indeed a splendid bird, and he has given me a pair of red shoes." The wife sprang up, with her hair standing out from her head like flames of fire. "Then I will go out too," she said, "and see if it will lighten my misery, for I feel as if the world were coming to an end." But as she crossed the threshold, crash, the bird threw the millstone down on her head, and she was crushed to death. The father and little Marlene heard the sound and ran out, but they only saw mist and flame and fire rising from the spot. And when these had passed, there stood the little brother, and he took the father and little Marlene by the hand. Then they all three rejoiced and went inside together and sat down to their dinners and ate. End of the Juniper Tree.
Boys and girls, listen up. You can be anything in the world, and God we trust. An architect, doctor, maybe an actress, but nothing comes easy. It takes much practice. Like, I met a woman who's becoming a star. She was very beautiful, leaving people in awe. Singing songs, Lena Horne, but the younger version. Hung with the wrong person, got her strung on that heroin. Cocaine, sniffing up drugs, all in the nose. Could have died so young, now looks ugly and old. No fun, cause now when she reaches for hugs, people hold their breath, cause she smells of corrosion and death. Watch the company you keep and the crowd you bring, cause they came to do drugs and you came to sing. So if you're gonna be the best, I'ma tell you how. Put your hand in the air and take the vow. I know I can,
I know I can,
be what I wanna be,
be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it,
if I work hard at it,
I'll be where I wanna be,
I'll be where I wanna be.
Boys and girls, listen again. This is for grown-looking girls who's only 10. The ones who watch videos and do what they see, as cute as can be, up in the club with fake ID. Careful, for you meet a man with HIV. You can host the TV like Oprah Winfrey. Whatever you decide, be careful, some men be rapists, so act your age, don't pretend to be older than you are. Give yourself time to grow. You're thinking he can give you wealth, but so young boys, you can use a lot of help, you know. You're thinking life's all about smoking weed and ice. You don't wanna be my age and can't read and write.
begging different women for a place to sleep at night. Smart boys turn them in and do whatever they wish. If you believe you can achieve, then say it like this. I know I can.
I know I can.
Be what I wanna be.
Be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it.
If I work hard at it.
I'll be where I wanna be.
I'll be where I wanna
now,
be.
Go.
I know I can.
Before we came to this country, we were kings and queens, never porch monkeys. There was empires in Africa called Kush, Timbuktu, where every race came to get books to learn from black teachers who taught Greeks and Romans, Asian Arabs, and gave them gold. When gold was converted to money, it all changed. Money then became empowerment for Europeans. The Persian military invaded, they heard about the gold, the teachings, and everything sacred. Africa was almost robbed naked. Slavery was money, so they began making slave ships. Egypt was the place that Alexander the Great went. He wasn't shocked that the mountains were black faces. Shot up their nose to impose what basically still goes on today, you see. If the truth is told, the youth can grow. They learn to survive until they gain control. Nobody says you have to be gangsters, hoes. Read more, learn more, change the globe. Ghetto children, do your thing. Hold your head up, little man, you're a king. Young princess, when you get your wedding ring, your man is saying, she's my queen. I know I can.
I know I can.
Be what I wanna be.
Be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it.
If I work hard at it.
I'll be where I wanna be.
I'll be where I wanna be.
I know I can.
Y'all. Save the music, y'all. Save the music, y'all. Save the music, y'all. Save the music.